This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, here with Koo Soo Chuang, and we're going to be with you till 10 a.m. this morning. Now,
for better or for worse?
Are you proposing?
Till death do us part.
Are you proposing, Chuang? I think you're married already, right?
But well, there's two kinds of marriages, right? There's your on-air marriage and then there's your off-air marriage.
Okay, my on-air husband has spoken. Well, it's 6 a.m. And the 7th of July, Tuesday. And Chuang, on a funny note, do you know that today is Georgetown Heritage Day?
Yes, yours, actually, I do.
Your kampong.
I do. Because last week I was in Penang, right? And then the guy that was supposed to come and paint my apartment, he says, okay, we can only come next week, but either on Monday or Wednesday. So I said, what's wrong on Tuesday? It was Tuesday public holiday. So I said, what kind of public holiday? Oh, only Penang holiday. So I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. Just come, okay? I wasn't aware there was a heritage thing.
See, so you learn something new every day.
Malaysia is over public holiday.
Nonsense.
It is. That's why Malaysians are so slack.
I totally disagree with you. I look forward to every single public holiday. But anyway, July 7th was marked as Georgetown World Heritage Day because basically the United Nations UNESCO awarded Georgetown this World Heritage Site. So yay, Penang celebrates it every year.
Yeah, yeah. So today we feel very heritages.
Heritages.
We do.
You just made up that word.
Yeah.
But the issue is sadly with COVID-19, the festivals that come together with Georgetown World Heritage Day all cancelled, sadly.
Yeah, so you can't get together and cheer in unison, I'm afraid.
I mean, yeah, hopefully everything reverts back to normal in 2021. And I mean, later today, I think at 7:15, we'll be talking about how COVID-19 has impacted Georgetown, and which is particularly dependent on tourism. But in the meantime, what stories do we have, Chuang?
Well, I will be talking about exactly that, because Fast Company, that does put out a lot of articles like these, talks to six experts about whether or not they think that concerts and festivals will ever be the same way that we used to remember them as.
The new normal.
The new normal.
In the meantime, I'll be talking about music in movies. How important is it?
Very important.
Well, if you want to weigh in on the conversations, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, Live Forever by Oasis. BFM 89.9, and that was actually not Live Forever, but Live Forever by Oasis. And I'm Wong Xiaoning and Koo Soo Chuang, and of course, this is The Morning Run. Now, we've got a bit of a sad story to start with, and it's an obituary in the BBC. And it's about Ennio Morricone, who was born in Rome on 10th of November 1928. Now, his name may not be familiar to you, but his music is probably, because he's had as many as six Oscar nominations from 1979 to 2016 for music scores. So movies like Days of Heaven, The Mission, Untouchables, Bugsy, Malina, and The Hateful Eight. So Chuang, have you heard of him before this?
Yeah, major. I mean, his heyday was in the 80s, right? Because that's when he was in his pomp, right? And the soundtrack which really resonated with me was that Robert De Niro movie, The Mission. Don't know whether you ever watched it, but it was about De Niro.
Yeah, everybody died in that movie. Literally.
No. I don't think so. I don't remember the entire movie. But basically, Robert De Niro, in a bout of hate and jealousy, killed his brother in a sword fight, I think it was. And then, of course, he felt really bad about it. Like, then he went on this huge mission to redeem himself up in the South American jungle.
But where everybody died.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, you remember that movie, do you?
Yes.
sorry, everybody died. But it was an amazing soundtrack. And Morricone is a composer, right? He played the trumpet, and amazing guy. But good innings, as they say. 91 years old is a good innings.
I think for us, you know, the point is when you watch a movie, the music is something that sometimes it's almost there in the background, but you don't realize that if without it, the movie has loses that soul, that impact, right?
100%.
And I realized that actually myself when I went to see an MPO performance where they played live music together with the movie, the Alfred Hitchcock movie, Psycho.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's yeah, when yeah, it's yeah. really dramatic because that in the shower scene, right? And also what I didn't realize is that how much orchestras play a part in live in movies.
Yeah, 100%.
You think it's all synthesized, it's all out of a computer, it's some guy on a keyboard. No, it's more than that. There's so many moving parts. And I think, you know, what's interesting is that when we look at music soundtracks, you know, of course you've got all the Oscar-winning ones. But there are also lots of music which, you know, bring great joy to me in Disney movies.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right? Which is your favorite?
Of course, the most recent one, of course, is Frozen, you know, the Let It Go.
Oh,
I think,
my God. My daughter sang that for literally like 2 years.
I know my nieces in the car would be like, let it go, let it go. And they were just like, really never let it go. Yeah. And after a while, I felt like, okay, enough.
You
girls.
Guys let it go.
Yeah, you guys let it go. But, you know, that's the point. Movie resonates with whatever age group, whatever genre, whatever movie. And without it, it doesn't. Somehow the movie isn't half as great, right?
Yeah, I think that people, a lot of people, underestimate the importance of music in our lives and in our brains and how it makes us operate, okay? And how it allows us to recall certain days in our lives, certain eras in our lives which are so, in a way, instrumental, okay? I once went to a vineyard in Tuscany, right?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I did. True story.
Tell us more about this, Drunk.
I took a cheap tour, okay? Come on, I took a cheap tour from the UK,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, no cheap tours in Tuscany, but never mind.
Good. But anyway, okay, so I went there and the vineyard owner, he was playing Brahms 24/7 to his vineyards and the trees, the vines grew beautifully. And then he had a trial patch of the vineyard where he played 24/7 hard heavy metal music. And I'm not kidding you, right? The vines were dying.
Oh.
They were dying. They were dying.
Which proves the point that music is for the soul. Not only just us, but basically every living thing, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But you know, one thing about music, right? Okay, have you ever watched a movie where you can't really remember much about the movie, but the soundtrack stays with you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you mine. Mine is The Chariots of Fire.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
I cannot for the life
where
of me.
With the dancing, like they're running on the beach,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I can barely remember the movie. I know it's something about some running thing, some Olympic thing. But the music... The music has stayed with me. And I watched that movie, Chuang, when I was like 8 or 9.
Well, then you're not that old after all then, are you? No.
So the point is there are some scores which really kind of stay in your memory and capture a certain moment.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and absolutely. For me, I think Chariots of Fire is one of them. What is one for you?
Okay, so mine are the actual soundtracks, right? So for me, and I'm showing my age here, things like Top Gun, right?
Oh!
You know Top Gun?
Yeah.
Wow, amazing movie, right? Like Iceman and, you know, Maverick and all that. And the soundtrack... So amazing. And then Take Your Breath Away. You know that bit where he's with a girl, right? You Take Your Breath Away. Yeah,
okay, you're really showing your age. But yeah. I think there's so many great music scores, like the entire Star Wars series, for example.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Right? 100%.
Or even some of the famous, like, I would say, action movies.
Yeah. But do you think in the modern era, there is that genre of composers that have been
that
able
same
to create
depth.
That Or is it because we have now become a little bit less absorbent? Do you know what I mean? Absorbent?
Maybe. We also don't seem to have movies on that grand scale like we used to. Movies seem to be like, now it's all Netflix, right?
Actually, they do, right?
Yeah, but the scores, I don't know.
The Irishman, right? Netflix, right? Just the
3-hour drama.
The third part of...
Did it have the same depth, the music?
I don't think
so. No, it doesn't.
You know?
So for me, somehow maybe that music era is kind of like different. And also the movies have become
okay,
smaller.
So there are still great scores. Come on, tell us. Which ones? Because... Actually, some say the scores now are even more amazing.
Well, that's true. Let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Tenet? What's Tenet?
Or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was 17 by Sharon Van Etten. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning and Chuang. Now, today, like I mentioned earlier, is Georgetown Heritage Day. And sadly, there is no Georgetown Festival that usually happens in conjunction with this big day. And because of this, we are also looking at an article from Fast Company about how festivals, concerts, and even ballroom dancing are going to work in this new environment with COVID-19. What's the new normal? So, of course, one of the suggestions is to go online. What do you think, Chuang? Would you attend a festival online?
No, la. I mean, the very definition of a festival or a concert or a live event is that a whole bunch of people who like that same act or that same performance go in there in a like-minded fashion and then support it and then celebrate it, right? But it means that you're gathering in a large space with a large amount of people and then you get to interact with them and enjoy the event together, right? I mean, that is the very basis of why a live event exists. If you can't do that, and, you know, it just doesn't happen. It just can't get together. And the six people that Fast Company spoke to, people who organized Burning Man in Nevada or Broadway in New York, it can't happen anymore. Whether or not we return to those days, I don't know, because we can't tell the future. But for now, I'd venture to say that live events are very much a thing of the past.
Yeah, but
because that's how you catch the virus, right? You just catch it from one another.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there are reservations for sure to be in, let's say, for a music concert, right? Even, let's say, a formal one in Malaysian Philharmonic Orchestra.
Yeah, the MPO. You're still going to sit next to the next guy.
I mean, maybe you probably can put into practice some physical distancing. So let's say the capacity there is typically 2,000 people, and then you reduce it to 500, like on a plane. So you space people out, and then you can watch the concert. I think some events are possible. You could pivot. But there are some events where I think it's going to be very challenging. And one of them is, you know, like you say, music concerts, like rock concerts.
Where how can you go to a Foo Fighters concert and then have like, you know, 1 to 4 seats? It's just not going to happen, right? Why would you?
Even like, let's say, you know, Taylor Swift. Could you actually stop the fans from dancing and congregating with each other? I think it's going to be very difficult. They'll be jumping around, right? And they'll be, you know, making a lot of...
And then all it takes is one guy to just sneeze, right? and then, ba-da, you got it.
Yeah, and the point is, you know, we do know the virus spreads very easily through, I would say talking, singing. So one of the SOPs, even at religious, when they're reopening churches, for example, is that apparently you're not going to be encouraged to sing because your saliva will be floating around. And that's going to happen in a concert. You're going to sing along, right? How can you go to a concert and like just keep quiet?
Yeah, so at some point in time, I think people will just forget and then they'll just want to continue with what they are, with what life was like before. And I think people will come to realize, and I'm not promoting this in any way, shape, or form at this point in time, but I think people realize that it's a virus, just like the flu, just like whatever. And the flu kills more people than, say, COVID, you know, on an annual basis. So you might get it, you'll be at risk of getting it at some point in time. You've just got to assume that risk, right? And then you go on and life goes on.
I'm not so sure I'm in the same boat with you.
Nor am I at this point in time. I'm not a big fan of that herd mentality argument. Immunity thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I think it's just going to be what it is for the moment. And I think, you know, if you're a music organizer, you run a festival, you can't just stop, right? You can't just say, I'm not going to do anything. Because life has to go on. So you have to think of imaginative ways to kind of have that same crowd, that same energy. But I would say, yes, some of it is lost. It's just as simple as having a meeting on Zoom.
Yeah, you know, and I'm not sure whether this has really been discussed, but you know Fortnite, right? That game. So now Fortnite has become like this place where it's not just about the game anymore. There's like been new music acts and concerts being staged entirely within the Fortnite atmosphere. And then you put on your goggles or whatever apparatus, and then you can really get into it, right? And I think that could be something there in the future. I don't know whether it's going to be made available in the next 1 or 2 years because of the cost issues or whatever intellectual property issues. But a lot of new acts have come on, and they actually have their album launches or their concerts in the Fortnite atmosphere. It's a big thing. It's a huge thing.
Will it replace, though, how we've been doing things?
Let's say once the vaccine comes out. Because you don't know, right? The virus is constantly mutating. Mm. And then now, I've read in America, there's now this new bunny virus. And then in Mongolia, they've just seen a recurrence of the bubonic plague. I mean, the thing is, as we get more people, right, in the world, and we get fewer animals, that the transmission between animals and humans will be a recurring theme. And this is something that Bill Gates talked about 4 years ago.
Which is true. So my question is, for some of the practices that we are now, you know, rolling out with regards to even festivals, because there are some festivals that are moving online. I mean, if it's, let's say, a literary festival, it's very possible.
A reading online
and then have interaction via Zoom. So some things, that will probably be how it would be. But for, let's say, music, I wonder how easy it is to replicate it. So maybe some practices will continue and some won't.
Yeah, you know, I was just listening to Russell Peters on Joe Rogan's podcast. You know, Russell Peters, Canadian Indian actor. And his income is entirely from live acts, right?
Yes.
And he will say, and you know, if you've ever seen Russell Peters on YouTube, he interacts with the crowd. So at least 30% of his act is just interacting with people in the crowd,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's the feedback mechanism,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and then he'll make fun of you and what you wear and all that, right? And the people you're with and da 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 da. And it's really funny. It's really funny.
Can you replicate that online?
You can't. Right, Jimmy, you can't. It's just not possible.
So I think also performers have to adjust, right? Because what can they do? They can't just continue doing what they've been doing all this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe music, singers, orchestras, they have to really think how they want to perform or how they need to continue making a living in this new COVID-19 era. What's the new normal for them?
Yeah. So we adjust.
Yeah. The artists have to adjust.
So I also do some training, right? And, you know, training is also very similar to the human interaction thing. You have to see how people act and how they behave, how they stand, all these things. Try to do it on Zoom a couple of times. Oh, my gosh. It is so alien. You know, talking to the screen, and then you like, see, you've got 10 people in the room, right? Invariably, they turn off their audio, they turn off their video. So you're talking to like yourself. A 17-inch monitor, right? And you're like, it's a void, man. It's a real void.
Well, let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us there, here's All Right Now by Free. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Shaoning with Ho Su Chuang, and of course this is The Morning Run, and that was Agoraphobia by Deer Hunter. And it's 6:39 in the morning, and as usual, we're going to be taking a look at what's happening around the world. So I think the headlines is India, because the COVID-19 epidemic there has become the third biggest in the world after the US and Brazil. Now, they have 700 cases so far, and unfortunately, 20,000 deaths. And what is going to make the whole thing even sadder is that it's projected to exceed as many as 800,000 cases this month. Now, it's not because India didn't implement a lockdown. They did at the end of March. And at that time, there were fewer than 1,000 cases. But the Prime Minister, Modi, was forced to ease these curbs in June to rescue, of course, the tanking economy.
Yeah, so of course, we've got various projections about the GDP growth, or rather contraction. Moody's expects India's economy to go minus 3.1% this year. IMF predicts minus 4.5%. And that's the lowest level of growth in a decade, right? So this is a, what, 1.3 billion person economy?
Yes.
Big, huge, right? And of course, the sovereign ratings are suffering. Moody's downgraded India to Baa3. The lowest grade investment rating below that is junk, and beyond which your borrowing costs will go through the roof. And S&P,
Argentina part two.
That's right. And inflation in India is crazy, right? S&P and Fitch also rate India one notch above junk, and Fitch last month lowered the outlook for the country to negative. Of course, ratings agencies are loath to repeat their 2008 mistake by being slow off the mark. So they're being very on the ball this time. But what's the repercussions to the borrowing nations? It's going to be huge.
I mean, India already before COVID-19 was not doing very well economically. The unemployment rate was very, very high, especially among the young. And I think Modi, got re-elected on the platform that, you know, he'll make India great again because he's best friends with you-know-who, right? President Trump. But there's a question over his handling over this whole COVID-19. Did he open up the economy so soon? But I think the reality is that it's a country where 100 million people live on a daily wage.
Yeah.
Daily wage, right? Right. So either, you know, some analysts were saying, okay, what choices do you have? You either die from COVID-19 or you sadly die from starvation. So the argument was that Modi didn't have a choice. He had to open up. But now we're seeing the repercussions of this in a country where we know that the healthcare system is already struggling. There's not enough testing. So I wonder what is the outcome going to be like for them?
Well, nobody's got a template for success, right? Brazil is in there and they are an emerging economy as well. India's in there. Even America. You could say that America's economy is broke even though the stock market is at record highs, right? Nobody's got a panacea for the problem.
No, so, you know, if you look at the countries which have succeeded in, you know, facing COVID-19 squarely head on, right, and succeeding, are those countries where I think the reality is that they have spent a fair bit on their healthcare systems. So ironically, like China, we never thought that they could actually roll out hospitals like literally overnight and, you know, impose really stringent lockdowns. But at what economic cost? For China, they seem to be doing okay. The, you know, IPI numbers have somewhat recovered. But for a country which is already very vulnerable economically before, like India, like Brazil, what happens, you know, then it really causes, I would say, a recession, a depression almost.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some people are saying that this is going to be the worst. In fact, it's more already the worst since 2029, right? And for everybody, 2020 is almost like a write-off here. We're in July already, Xiaoling, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I don't know what other, you know, choices India has in terms of monetary policy or fiscal policy, especially if your fiscal sovereign rating is at pressure of being downgraded to junk.
Yeah.
And everybody's watching Argentina, which has defaulted 9 times in the last, 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be a question mark. But if we look at other issues around the world, one of which is, I think, the ongoing tension between China and the rest of the Western world, because even the UK is having crosshairs over Huawei, because China has warned the UK that it will face consequences if it chooses to be a hostile partner. And this is news that emerged after Boris Johnson, UK's Prime Minister, is preparing to phase out the use of Huawei technology in UK's 5G telecommunications network. Now, if it's taken, it would be a decision, it would be a U-turn by the Johnson's administration.
Yeah, this is kind of like something related to what we discussed yesterday with
techno-nationalism.
And
Alex Capri.
That's right, with the Heinrich Foundation. And the issue is with two discernible big superpowers out there, there will come a time, and Malaysia not excluded, that we have to make a decision between who we go with, right? The UK is in the position now. They have come to that crossroads. They have been allies with the US for a number of years, since the Second World War, right? They have to maintain that relationship because of the business they do with each other. If the UK continues to deal with China, that relationship with America fractures. So they have to take a side. They're now taking a side, but with taking the side with the Americans, they are now they're now at risk of losing their relationship with China. And China's relationship is very important with the UK. So that's what BJ, good old Bojo, is facing right now.
Yeah, not easy times for him.
Not easy times.
And staying on UK, right? I mean, it could be lights out for a dozen universities who are also suffering the impact of COVID-19. And this is on the back of student dropouts, because we know UK education is a big revenue earner for the United Kingdom. You and I both studied
there. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the positive, if you can even call it that, or constructive effects of the COVID-19 is the Darwinian effect, right? Only the strong survive. And you and I know there's a lot of colleges and universities and private schools in the UK who don't matter from a qualitative standpoint, but who do exist because there's a lot of parents, rich parents around the world, who send their children to the UK to get a British education. But those papers don't mean squat.
Well, there's a potential loss of as much as 19 billion pounds there if, you know, if all these foreign students don't turn up in the UK education institutions over the next year. But let us know what you think about any of these stories, of anything we've discussed this morning. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and, of course, what's online. We'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Wong Xiaoling with Khoo Soo Chuang, who's busy flipping the newspapers in the background. And this is the morning run.
Dramatic effect, lah.
Yeah, okay. Mm. And that was You and Me, song by The One of These. And now, as Chuang is already doing, we're taking a look at the newspapers this morning. So, Chuang, what do you have in front of you?
Well, I've chosen three stories. Page 4 of The Star goes with the government hitting out at Al Jazeera over what it calls false reporting. As we know, 3 days ago, Al Jazeera ran a documentary which suggested that Malaysia did not treat its illegal immigrants quite nicely. And you can go and check out that documentary, about 20 minutes long, on YouTube. Page 6 of the New Straits Times talks about how former Prime Minister Dato Sri Najib's son, 37 years old, Nazifuddin, I think, owes, get this right, 38 million ringgit in unpaid taxes, which then makes you question what was the actual sum involved for him to garner a 38 million ringgit income tax.
Which is based on profit, by the way, right?
Definitely. And not related at all to that story is the Malaysia Kini story from discussing that UMNO has withdrawn its suit against CIMB, because CIMB has until now refused to allow UMNO access to its bank account, totaling 193 million ringgit. So not related at all to the second story at all. Not
just
related.
All big sums of money.
Yeah, just sums of money. Yeah.
Meanwhile, if I look at the Malaysian Reserve, the headline is, Khazanah has no plans for the deputy MD post. This is because of the recent reshuffle of the management at the Sovereign Wealth Fund. Now, they also had a 2019 Khazanah Annual Report, which does show that this deputy MD job doesn't exist anymore. I think this is because the departure of their former deputy MD, Ahmad Zulkarnain, who has now moved on to be PNB's new CEO.
Yeah, I mean, they're cost-cutting, right? Khazanah National used this spanking nice corporate office in KLCC, right? Tower 2. And then they cut costs. They moved to KL Central and they, you know, basically they did the right thing. And now with lower headcount, it also means that Khazanah are paying less money in salaries and emoluments on a monthly basis. I think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah, they also closed all their expensive offices in, I think, New York and London.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think they're refocusing on domestic investments. And they did clean up their books last year after some losses.
Yeah, quite the opposite from some other state investment funds. But that's, of course, a story for another day.
Meanwhile, on the sidebar in the Malaysian Reserve, we do have this article on the indefinite bar of foreign maids, a bane for employment agencies.
Okay.
Yeah, so sometimes we think about it only in terms of industry. So we've talked about it on the show about gloves, about palm oil. But yes, foreign domestic helpers are actually part of this whole chain. And yes, I think for a lot of families who now have to go back to work, this is going to be an issue for them.
Oh, absolutely. And also the fact that kindergartens opened some time ago, some days ago, but there was culling, right? So if you don't make the grade, your children have no place to, no kindergarten to go to. And that's a big issue as well. So that economic recovery is hampered somewhat by the fact that some working parents can't go back to work. Page 6 of the Star. In Singapore, this High Court in Singapore has granted an order to block 17 domains associated with pirate sites and 41 linked to illicit streaming devices. What people are now calling a huge milestone for the content industry. It's a great move, says Media Prima Digital CEO Rafiq Razali. Sets a good precedent for something similar to be enacted here, which then begs the question, why wasn't it done before in Malaysia? And then secondly, what happens to virtual private networks, which allow you to anyway circumvent these issues? But that's, of course, again, another story for another day.
Meanwhile, if I'm looking at the Edge CEO Morning Brief, which is a relatively new thing coming out from the Edge, which is only available online. The headline is, will another OPR cut be of much help?
And that's today, right?
Yes, because today the Monetary Policy Committee meets and there are expectations whether there might be an announcement. I think Reuters poll yesterday, slightly more than half the economists expect another 25 bips cut. Currently, OPR is at 2%.
Yeah,
so we get to 1.75%. And we had a call with the OCBC economist, right, Relianto.
Relian Maranto, yeah.
Yeah, where he said he doesn't think so because he thinks Bank Negara should stay pat and keep its powder dry. And you can listen, of course, to that conversation on the BFM app and or on Spotify.
Yeah, the government might be better served by a cut later on in the year if they do call for snap elections. And of course...
Or when loan moratoriums come to an end, which is in September.
If they do come to an end. Obviously, because not to say that central banks are not independent, but, sometimes things tend to move in unison, right? So,
Meanwhile, I've got one more story from the Singapore Straits Times because it's election time.
Because it's just Singapore Straits Times and they're good at what they do, right?
Well, their headline is PAP seeks not just your mandate, but your strong mandate to lead Singapore through the crisis. PM Lee.
Well, is there anything other than a procession for the PAP in Singapore?
I think it's pretty much given that they will
win. It's a given, right?
Yeah, but I guess the question is, will the opposition chip away at their majority? Right. That's the big question. And, is the handling of the COVID-19 where they had, these clusters in foreign worker dormitories going to be something that the Singapore citizens are going to be not happy about and vote against them?
Yeah, good news from the Malaysia Kini for Shillings, actually, the PR firm out of London, very high-level firm that takes care of the reputation of wealthy individuals. They were paid $1.3 million between January last year and March this year for services rendered for their client, none other than Lau Teck Joe, otherwise known as Joe Lau, otherwise known as Mr. 1MDB, otherwise known as the Whale.
Okay, that's all we have this morning from the papers. Coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis. But first here, Talk to Me by Stevie Nicks, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.